So some questions as we get into this text today that I want you to start kind of mulling over in your brain. This has been one of the most conflicting sermons for me personally. I have just like felt a heaviness and a weightiness. Ironically, there is contention in this passage, and I felt it personally. So let me ask some questions on the front end here to kind of have you mull that over as we work through. What are some ways that we differ from family to family in our church in how we pursue making disciples in our city? Think about that personally. How, if you look across this room, there are different families, individuals that pursue the mission of making disciples a little bit differently than others within the church. And with that in mind, how can we learn today from Paul and Barnabas's conflict? How can we learn that we can differ in ways in our ministering without disrupting fellowship? Start to think on that. How would you say then the end result of your family mission to make disciples in this church has caused Redeemer or other churches or believers to be strengthened? And how you pursue making disciples, how has it caused other believers to be strengthened in our city or in our church? And the last question I want you to start mulling over is, what is the Lord calling you to give up in your life in order to share the gospel and make disciples? What is the Lord calling you to give up in your life in order to share the gospel, make disciples? These are all questions we have to ask ourselves, and we've got to deal with through this passage. As Patrick Boyle has mentioned several times over, the gospel train has been moving. It has picked up steam, and it is going. There's nothing that's going to step in front of it and stop it. And so it's going, and then all of a sudden we have tension among believers. And not just any believers, Paul and Barnabas, the head leaders of this gospel train movement, if you will. And so the questions I have instantly, and we're going to read it here in a minute, is this a sin issue? Was there like real sin problems between Paul and Barnabas? Was this just kind of like they're slapping each other and punching each other angry? Is it okay for there to be tension between people so tightly knitted together in the gospel? Is that okay to have? Or do we always have to be smiling and excited and glad-handing one another? Is it okay that there's tension? And I thought about this. When we counsel people before they get married in premarital counseling, we try to prepare them for the reality of what is going to happen before they tie the knot with another sinner. Right? When you get sinner A with sinner B and have them tie the knot and become one unified sinner, there's going to be tension in the house always, correct? And so we always try to like do everything we can to prepare people for marriage and not the wedding day, to prepare them for the reality of like, you're going to get angry if the toilet seat's not down. Just letting you know, and then you're going to start questioning why you married this man. This is what's going to happen. It's so crazy. In the same vein, in the same weird vein, that's how my mind works, you're seeing two saved sinners by grace coming together trying to strategize on how to reach other sinners, right? And of course, it's going to become a mess. There is no doubt in my mind that it will become messy. And here's what I would say. We need to own that as believers. We need to keep pretending that the church is some clean, spotless little thing that happens in the neighborhood, and there's never any problems, there's never any disagreements. We need to just stop fooling ourselves and understand that we're all sinners saved by grace, trying to live as family in life together with other sinners saved by grace, and we're upset because somebody else is putting the toilet seat up and leaving it up and not putting it down. So we're seeing this tension here. We have a room full of very different people coming from very different backgrounds, offering a host of different of opinions and ideas and philosophy on how to make disciples. We all come to the table saying, well, I think we should do this, or I think we should do that, or invest time here, or invest time there. This is okay, and it's not a bad reality, but it does not mean a church split. It means we can disagree in a healthy manner. So, we can pardon our ways on strategy, we can pardon on philosophy, we can pardon on ministry, we can agree to disagree, but we must never pardon on the gospel. Never. And so my sermon title today is a mission-centered pardon. A mission-centered pardon. So when I talk about mission, I'm talking about the feet going and doing. I'm not talking about the gospel where Jesus died for our sins and rose from the grave. That's completely different. I'm talking about mission and strategy and focus. So we have a pardoning of ways in mission. We're going to see it in a couple ways. First is the more obvious in verses 36 through 41, a pardon of mission strategy, not a pardon of the gospel. And then secondly, in the case of 16, 1 through 5, a pardon of self for the sake of the mission. First, a pardon of mission strategy, not a pardon of the gospel. Let me read 36 through 38. And after some days, Paul said to Barnabas, "Let us return and visit the brothers in every city where we proclaim the word of the Lord and see how they are." Okay, very simple mission, goal, focus. Let's just go make sure the churches are okay. Perfect. Now Barnabas wanted to take with him John called Mark, but Paul thought best not to take with them one who had withdrawn from them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work. Let me read the remaining verses. And there arose a sharp disagreement, so that they were separated from each other. Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed away to Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and departed, having been commended by the brothers to the grace of the Lord, and he went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches. So we have a pardon of mission strategy, not a pardon of the gospel. Barnabas chooses Mark, and of course, Mark is his cousin. We know this from Galatians. But secondly, I think something happened with Mark in Acts chapter 13. We're not entirely sure what happened, but on that first missionary journey, I think Pastor Nathan may have preached on this, but that journey was tough. Where they were going was tough. It's very possible that Mark got sick, maybe had to go back home. Others speculate that he had some beef with the fact that the Gentiles were going to be joined to the table of fellowship with Jews, so he went back and maybe is the one who stirred up the controversy we talked about last week. It's all speculative. Luke gives us no detail, and he does that on purpose. He wants to leave what we need to know in the passage and all the other details. He wants us to have to wander and ponder and speculate, because the focus is not all the details of that, but the fact of what actually took place between Paul and Barnabas, that they separated. Barnabas, being the encourager, the encouragement type, is going, "Hey, I think Mark is fit to go on this journey with us. I think he's fit to go. I think he's ready to rock and roll. We had this hiccup last time in the first journey, but he's ready to go this time." And then Paul comes back and he says, "No, he's not ready to go. We've got some very specific, important work to do, and I can't rely on somebody who may be flaky." That's kind of the overall feel that I get. Paul, bottom line, didn't want somebody to abandon them, even though it may seem that Mark has changed, and he doesn't want to put any trust there. And so then there is a sharp disagreement, a sharp disagreement. This word occurs only twice here in the New Testament. One here, kind of this negative sense. The second time is in the book of Hebrews, in a more positive sense. It's so strong, in fact, that it actually has this non-reconcilable tension to it. Like, they're so in disagreement with one another that there's really no reconciling. That's how strong this word actually is. And so Luke doesn't actually help us understand if that's really true or not. He doesn't in this specific text. But we do know, this is why understanding the rest of Scripture is good, that the two parties didn't allow these differences to be non-reconcilable. They didn't camp there. Because we see later on that Paul actually longs for Barnabas, and he actually longs for Mark to be with him. In 2 Timothy, he says, "I want Mark with me because of how valuable he is to me." And so they didn't let that sit there. And I think that falls into the second time we see this word in the New Testament, Hebrews chapter 10. It says, "And let us consider how to stir that's the word, how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. So in this tension that we see here in the narrative, I believe the way that this narrative plays out and the way that the rest of Scripture plays out, that Paul and Barnabas, though they disagreed to a severe level, they did not allow that to disrupt the table of fellowship, knowing that they are brothers in Christ. And so Paul chooses Silas. And it was a good strategic move. Silas is also a Roman citizen, so as Paul goes back in to encourage the Gentile Christians in this Roman culture, he has somebody who understands and who's able to walk that line of understanding how Jews and Gentile Christian converts can come to the same table. And so this is a good teammate for Paul. And so they part ways and they go out. And there's something very different about the beginning of this second missionary journey. And if you could, Rick, go ahead and put up that map. I'm going to leave the map up here. It's kind of hard to see. But the purple is going out from Antioch. The purple going out is the second missionary journey, which goes way over into Europe. And then the red is him coming back. So the first missionary journey is that blue line, and the second one is the purple and the red. So the second missionary journey, I'm just going to leave that up there so you have a visual while we're going through this. There's something very different about this second journey. And what is the difference? Acts 13:3, the church prayed, they fasted, and it says they sent Paul and Barnabas out. Right, we talked about that when we preached about that. That was exciting. This is what we're doing when we lay hands on Patrick and Jessica. These are our Paul and Barnabas. We're laying hands on them. We're praying. We're fasting. We hope to send them out. But here we see something different. Paul and Barnabas split up and depart. I have this kind of funny thing with our CG leaders, our community group leaders. I say, no, we're not dividing or splitting our community groups. We're multiplying and sending out. Here, I would have to tell Paul and Barnabas, no, we're not splitting, we're sending. Okay, this is what we see that is really different. There was no unified act of the church, praying, fasting, and together sending. And while they're disagreeing over a mission issue, the sad reality is that even in this non-sinful tension, I would say there's no sinfulness going on here as to their division, there is conflict that is causing brothers in the faith to not be able to minister with one another. There's real conflict. And so while there's not this beautiful send-off, Luke does show us that the conflict within the church is real. This is what Luke is showing us. There's real conflict. Quit pulling the wool over your eyes and trying to pretend like churches don't ever have issue or disagreement. But he also shows us that conflict is able to part ways without killing the mission. So Paul and Barnabas go two separate ways, but they don't go with a chip on their shoulder. They go and they do the work. They actually, without even realizing it, double mission efforts. Paul and Silas go off to Syria. Barnabas and Mark go off to Cyprus, their hometown. And they double mission efforts. And notice, when the church sends them out and they do the work, Paul leaves, and the work he does, what does it do? It results in strengthening the church. There's no talk about how he went and started new churches because he was frustrated with how these guys were doing it. He didn't have a chip on his shoulder because he disagreed with somebody else. Some disgruntled church planner going, I hate the way these old folks do their church, so I'm going to go start my own. It's not what he does. They part ways, agreeing to disagree, and he goes out doing the work. And we don't really hear of Barnabas from this point on. Luke really hones in and focuses on Paul's mission throughout the rest of the book of Acts. So, how do we bring this home? How do we talk about this weird tension without making it real weird? Well, it's impossible with me to not make things weird, but I will try. Thinking on a bigger picture, church-wide scale, Redeemer Church, City Reach Church, Life 360 Church, James River Church, whatever church is around here, church-wide, there are churches that we will partner with, and there are churches that we will not partner with. You go, wow, what do you mean? There are churches that we will partner with because, as far as mission and strategy goes, and even theologically, that's first and foremost, but mission and strategy goes, we align. It makes sense. But there are churches that we won't partner with. It doesn't mean we're against them or that we won't see them in heaven. I would say we would align theologically, but as far as boots on the ground, missional strategy, we just don't go to the same place. It just doesn't seem to work out. That's kind of the tension you're feeling here. Paul's like, I got to go here, and Mark is not fit to go with me. Let me give you an example of what I witnessed and I think is applicable here. So a few years ago, I went to Montreal, Quebec, in Canada, and I was there to pray about the possibility of partnering with some church plants there in that city. Beautiful city, French-Canadian province. It used to be dominated by the Catholic Church, and then about a generation ago, the culture just rebelled against Catholicism. Catholic buildings sitting all over the place as like empty museums. I hear you, brother. I told him to talk to me, and I got to get used to it because I need some more talking to up here, okay? And so the Catholic Church has essentially lost. They abused, and I'm talking up here, okay? They abused people. They stole money. They hurt a whole generation of French Canadians, and now their sons and daughters have completely rebelled against them and have become atheistic and antagonistic towards religion in general. And so now you have a whole generation of people that don't love God. But I will say this, there is church planting movements going on in that city, and these churches are swelling with genuine gospel-believing Christians, and it is amazing. But while I was there, there was a host of other pastors and ministry leaders kind of from around the country coming up there to kind of feel out how they could help. And there was another gentleman from a church in Virginia who was in charge of a children's choir. And he wanted to, and he was genuine, he wanted to love and care for these church planters. And one of the things you need to know about church planting and about missions in general is that if you want to partner with somebody doing the work, you don't say, hey, here's what I got to offer, how can I do that? No, you say, what do you need and how can I help you? This gentleman was of the other side. I've got a children's youth choir. We want to come up and sing for your people. And I could feel the weirdness and the tension on the church planter's face. And it was great because I could just sit back and watch because he wasn't asking me because I'd be like, I don't think I got anything for you. But I had to watch this awkward interaction where the choir, the children's choir director was asking the church planter in Montreal, atheist, antagonistic, religious Montreal, if he can bring up a bunch of Southern Baptist kids to sing hymns for a ministry outreach. Just wasn't going to work. They believed the same God. They believed the same Jesus. The partnership, missional strategy wouldn't work. They need people coming in, knowing the culture, being aware of the culture, learning French so that they can tell people the gospel in French. And so on a church-wide scale, there are people we will partner with and people we don't, but it doesn't mean we're not on the same team. Let me bring it a little more in, Redeemer-wide. Imagine your community group is needing to multiply, and you got a couple leaders in that group who have this heart, this passion to go plant a new community group, maybe in a hard place in Springfield, and these two leaders, being members of one church, they disagree on the type of people that they need to take with them and this mission of part in this part of town. They think philosophically, well, we need this person on our team. Well, no, I think we need this person on our team. If we're going to be effective, they're both eager to make the gospel known. They're both eager to make disciples, to see the kingdom grow, but they just could not agree on this reality. So they both, however, they cannot get past this. They agreed to plant two community groups, and instead of hating each other and spewing venom towards each other, they end up making disciples in two different areas of town while worshiping the same Jesus. It's the same kind of picture. Does that make sense? Paul, Barnabas, Silas, Mark, are not on different teams. They are on the same team. They're on the same church, but they have a differing of philosophy towards approaching the mission at hand. At that moment, in that time, in that situation, Paul was convinced he could not have Mark with him. Okay, we need to just go different ways. And so, church, do not expect everyone in this room to be fit for the same work as you. Don't think that the person next to you has to be doing the same exact thing as you. And if they're not, then maybe that they're in sin or something. No, let's make sure we're not talking about gospel. Make sure it's like if we're differing on something, it's a missional strategy. We believe the same Jesus, but we may go about approaching, reaching people a little bit differently. Some of you are more like Paul. I'm more of a Paul type. I'm apostolic. I want to trailblaze new works. I want to go into hard-to-reach places. I want to plant a church. I want to plant the gospel. Some of you are like that. Some of you are like Barnabas, where you want to minister in places a little bit more familiar. Barnabas and Mark go back to Cyprus, to their hometown, where they had influence over Sergius, part of the proconsul, and they had influence over the governing authority of Cyprus. They had opportunity to reach people in a way, really, that Paul and Silas did not. So neither work is better than the other. Both require different mindsets. Paul just didn't believe that Mark was ready in the way that he needed him. And so I'll say this, we need Pauls and Silases in our church, just like we need Barnabases and Marks in our church. We need trailblazers who will start hard work in hard places, hard community groups in hard places, or maybe go out as missionaries in hard places, planting churches in hard places. We need to arise as the Pauls. Some of you have kind of felt that, but you've kind of been holding back. You need to rise up and pursue it in humility and with love to serve our church as a trailblazer of the gospel to hard places. Me being the Paul type, if I just go around and I beat up the Barnabases and Marks thinking that they're not like me, I'm actually creating division. I'm not creating unity. But we need to see how people like me and the Pauls in the room are beneficial also to the Barnabases and the Marks. Are you seeking to take the mission a step further? Maybe you're a Paul. Is the Lord calling you to plant a community group in this city in a hard place? When will you go? And who are you going to take with you? Are you a Silas? Maybe you're not the number one guy like Paul, but maybe you're the number two guy. You'll follow Paul wherever he goes. Are you ready and willing to go with Paul in the hard-to-reach places? Let me stem it out a little bit more. The Boyles seem to be the Paul to Hiroshima. Who will consider being their Silas? Maybe some of you need to go with them and help them and aid them in that work. We must always be thinking of what the Lord is calling us and how it is that we are to function, what he's calling us to and how we are to function together. Some of us are Barnabases and Marks. We need encouragers in our churches, to those who seem to struggle with the mission. Mark seemed to struggle with the mission, so he went back home. Barnabas being the encourager type, hey, come on, cuz, let's go. Let's do this. And he kind of helped shape him up a little bit and raised him up. They went to their hometown in Cyprus. They had meaningful impact in that environment, just like I said. Barnabas and Mark must have significant opportunity to see the gospel spread by building up converted governing officials. That is something that me, the Paul type, have never really had the opportunity to have. Sure, I can be friends with council members and governing officials here in the city, but really, we just don't gel the same. But maybe you're a Barnabas and Mark type of person, and that's where you have your sway. And that's where you have your influence, and you could help change the dynamic of this city and those who lead it. And you must be willing to go and do the work. It's not an out by saying, well, I'm not a Paul and I'm not a Silas, so then I don't have to do the hard work. No. Barnabas and Mark were willing to go. Paul said no. You must be, as a Barnabas and a Mark, still willing to go. And maybe you're not fit for these certain hard works that Paul's and Silas's do, but you need to be eager for it. You need to be desirous for it. And you still have a responsibility as a disciple of Jesus to make disciples and to make his name known wherever it is you are. Let me give us a unified front. No matter where you see yourself this morning, whoever you identify yourself with, Paul, Mark, Barnabas, Silas, whoever it is, it can change from day to day. Some days I feel like one more than the other. It just all depends how the Lord is at work at me. But the scriptures are clear that all of them reunite later down the road and no longer have this sort of conflict. And they work together for the gospel. There is no reason we should ever divide on who we are in Christ. Paul and Barnabas separate over a missional strategic issue, not the gospel. It's not like Paul said, well, I believe Jesus just died for the Jews, and Barnabas is just like, no, I think he died for everybody. You know, it's not like some weird theological thing. No, it was a missional thing. And if we must defer on anything, it must be mission-oriented. It must have the gospel as the foundation to it, not anything sinful. And do not, however, allow disagreements to disrupt fellowship. As we mentioned last week, we cannot allow it to disrupt fellowship. In fact, that's part of the painstaking reality of being a church, is that we've got to work through these disagreements. Right? It's like your marriage. You got to work through these disagreements. You're going to disagree on your cultural upbringings, on how to set the table or how to eat dinner or what kind of food to eat or what to do on this day or that day. You can't just go, you know what, I'm done, and you walk out. A lot in our culture do, but if we're really Bible-believing Christians, we go, no, we've got to give something here. We've got to work and not disrupt this table of fellowship. And so back to the community group analogy, if we have leaders that disagree on who should go with them to plant a new community group, do not allow that disagreement to cease the mission of making disciples in our church, and do not allow that disagreement to cause the table of fellowship and Redeemer to ever close. It is okay if we have one community group serving the poor and homeless in Grant Beach and the other serving soccer moms in the burbs. It's really okay at the same time. Both need Jesus, and both will go to hell if they don't have Jesus. Paul and Barnabas left to two different mission fields, but forever their table of fellowship would open, and their goal was Christ. And so it goes back to the questions I asked you in the beginning. How do we differ on this mission field in this room? We all have different places of influence. We all live in different neighborhoods. We have all different cultural upbringings. Those may differ. We may actually disagree on how to do certain things. That's fine. But we have this one unifying reality, and it is Jesus Christ. The blood of Christ brings us together. Amen. And so we know there is a blessing in this tension because the church commended the work of Paul and Silas. There was blessing here. Though it wasn't this beautiful send-off that we see in Acts 13, there was still a commending here. Why didn't they do the same for Barnabas and Mark? We don't know. Luke doesn't let us know, but we know that Luke focuses on Paul, the remainder of Acts. But there would be no commending at all if their disagreement was founded on sin and not the gospel. Agree? Awesome. Thank you, John. Second, a pardon of self for the sake of the mission. A pardon of self for the sake of mission, chapter 16, 1 through 5. Let me read all these. Paul came also to Derbe and to Lystra. A disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a Jewish woman who was a believer, but his father was a Greek. He was well spoken of by the brothers at Lystra and Iconium. Paul wanted Timothy to accompany him, and he took him and circumcised him because of the Jews who were in those places, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. As they went on their way through the cities, they delivered to them for observance the decisions that had been reached by the apostles and elders who were in Jerusalem. So the churches were strengthened in their faith, and they increased in numbers daily. So Timothy comes into play here. Now, Paul's right-hand man, he will be alongside Silas. He, Timothy, benefited really from the first missionary journey that Paul and Barnabas were on together. As a result of their work, Timothy ends up coming to faith. Paul loves Timothy like a son. He does. He mentions him. He considers him a son in 1 Corinthians 4 and 1 Timothy 1. But he also addresses him as a kind of a co-sender in six other letters. I mean, Timothy is with Paul, and Paul is with Timothy, a real father in the faith. But we get to this point. Paul is already out with Silas, and he reaches Lystra, and he meets Timothy, and he's like, man, I want Timothy on my team. And Timothy was not 100% Gentile. He was not 100% Jew. But Paul knew that he could be beneficial in this ministry, and he would have an opportunity. Because what is Paul's custom when he goes into cities? He goes to the synagogues first, right? And he contends with the Jews, and he preaches the gospel there. And then when he kind of gets kicked out, he goes to the Gentiles also. And so when he goes into these hard-to-reach places where the Jews are, he needs to have a backup crew. He needs to have somebody who's with him. And so Timothy's dad was Gentile. Timothy was never circumcised. His dad was like, no, we're not going to play that game. This is my boy. I know you're a Jew, but he's not going to be circumcised. And so then Paul says, look, all the Jews know that your dad is a Greek. You are not going to have an ear with them as a Jew if you're not circumcised. And so Paul circumcises Timothy. He circumcises him. And he would then, as a result, open the door of preaching the gospel to the Jews. If Timothy was 100% Greek, was 100% Gentile, Paul would never even offer the option of circumcision. Right? Because it's not required for Gentiles to be circumcised. It's not even it's not theologically required that Timothy be circumcised, but for the sake of the mission, hey, let's just go ahead and I almost said cut down all doors. That's not fitting. Let's knock down all dividing walls here that would cause other people to not hear the gospel. Let's just go ahead and get over that hump, if you will, so that we can preach to them the good news. Paul backs this up later in 1 Corinthians 9:20. He says, to the Jews, I become a Jew. In order to win Jews, to those under the law, I become as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. This is a missional, strategic move. However I need to communicate to these people, I will give up something of myself in order to make that happen. And so Timothy has the same mindset. And so circumcision. Of course, I get to talk about circumcision a lot, apparently. So let's consider what is actually happening here. Let's consider. Circumcision is a very intimate, and I apologize if you have a weak stomach, intimate, bloody, permanent commitment to the promises of God. It's what it is. So why this part of the body and why nowhere else? The Bible gives no real clear explanation, but we do know this, that any other part of the body is easy by comparison. I'll pierce my ears. Can we just do that instead, right? Anything else, whatever it is, but please don't go there. That's the mentality. It's not like today where we say, hey, my word is my bond, and then easily walk away from it like it was nothing. Or even, this might hit a little harder, but like we sign Redeemer Church covenants and then we just walk out on the family. Just a piece of paper. This is a real, real commitment to the things of God. You feel the full weightiness of this. So to be circumcised means full commitment. You don't just casually walk into this sort of relationship like, oh, I didn't know what was going on. I'm part of the people of God, apparently. No, you actually have to make a decision. You've got to be there. And you've got to go through the process and the procedure of being circumcised. So the commitment you're making is lifelong and eternal. Now consider that in the context of the mission going forth to the nations. Timothy, obviously an adult, has to make a decision about the mission he's about to be set on. And he sees it as valuable, as important, and strong enough that he was willing to have Paul circumcise him for the sake of the gospel. Timothy is giving up himself for the mission. That's what he's doing. So, church, what are you willing to sacrifice for the sake of the mission of the gospel? Timothy made a lifelong commitment to aid in the gospel, going to the Jews and also to the Gentiles. What is it that you need to cut out from your life in order to reach who the Lord has put in your path? You're not where you are by accident. You're not who you are by accident. You don't have the vocabulary and the manner of thinking and the ways that you interact with people just by accident. The Lord has made you who you are and has placed you in certain neighborhoods and contexts and workplaces with a purpose. And most of the time, we hold on to something real dear to us, not allowing us to bring in the gospel in those contexts. We just kind of hold ourselves back. What is it that we need to let go of? Maybe it's an idol. I'd say as a church, we've given up a lot to be here in this community. Right? We're not all Grant Beachers, okay? Maybe just a few of us, but we're here. We could really be anywhere else. We could build a church building on the outskirts of town. We could go buy an empty, vacant church facility, probably in a much cheaper location, and we could probably grow it and swell it pretty quickly. We've given a lot to be in this community, to plant community groups around the city and send folks out around the globe. We have given a ton to make sure that happens. What else do we need to give up in order to be more effective in our context? I don't think we always give up everything we need to. What else is there that we need to just let go of, that we're holding on to, in order to be a part of the mission? If you feel convicted about this community and neighborhood, I'm gonna focus on Grant Beach for a minute, and I understand it's not everybody in the room, okay? But on this neighborhood, which of you will give up a Thursday evening to interact with lost people? Who will? I had a conversation with my wife, and I'll be the first to admit. I had a conversation with my wife, and I said, look, they've been doing these meals for a year now, and we haven't even showed up but maybe once or twice. Granted, it's not easy for families. I totally get it, okay? There's always something going on, maybe like a practice or something, and it interrupts. Get it. But we haven't even dove in. Why? How come? And so what are we going to do? We have 7 homes in or around Grant Beach in the last 2 years. That is something to celebrate, that people are moving into this area to be missionaries in this area with the hopes to see people come and know the Lord and love the Lord and be on mission for the Lord. So my question then is, how will all of these homes be more effective for the kingdom in this community? What are we going to do, leaders of these homes and leaders of these community groups, to come together and collaborate together for the work of the mission here in this neighborhood? What do we need to give up? What do we need to be praying for? And I hope you don't hear that as condemning. I think we've done a lot of work. I really do. And I think we've seen a ton of fruit, more fruit than we even know that even exists. But what else is there that is just holding us back from going and really doing what God has called us to do? You go, well, what about where I live, Pastor? I don't live in this neighborhood. I don't interact with this neighborhood. Look, good. We don't need everybody in this room to live here, right? You need to be where the Lord has you. How do you then, What is it that you need to give up in order to tell your neighbors about Jesus? When you pull into your neighborhood, into your home, wherever that is, do you break for your neighbors? Does your heart tear apart because you know that without Jesus, your neighbor is going to hell? Does that even bother you? Do you even know who your neighbors are? Have you even asked them over to your house, or is your house a sacred space? Don't come in it. What are we living for? What are we buying homes for? What are we doing any of this stuff for? Is it just for ourselves, just to hoard it, to hold on to it? What are you doing in your context? And what can we do, those who live here, I who live here, how can we help you and aid you in your mission where you're at? Because some of us just don't get it. And for everyone, I have so many dreams and ambitions for you. But what are some of those dreams and ambitions that you have that you need to die to today? What do you need to let go of just for the simple reality that somebody around you might know Christ? What do you need to give up? What do you need to stop doing? And what do you need to start doing? It doesn't matter if you're here in Grant Beach or if you live in Nixa or Ozark or Buffalo or Bolivar, wherever it is, it doesn't matter. What is it that you need to start doing? And sometimes we get caught up in doing so much, we make excuses not even to be on mission. Some of you have already thought how you're going to answer the question. If I come to you and ask you if you can help on Thursday night, you've already worked up a default answer. I'm not going to ask you, by the way, but I know you've already thought up a way to dodge the bullet, if you will. This sounds grotesque, but is there a part of your body you would cut off and scar if it meant people in this neighborhood, this city, and around the globe would know the gospel? It's pretty intense, isn't it? It's what Timothy had to do. If your answer is no, then ask yourself right now, what sin is there in my heart that would keep me from such a sacrifice? What idol are you clinging to that you got a hold of? What American dream are you clutching tightly to? What is it in your life that is above the gospel? Because that's what I'm saying here. If you have something else that you're holding on to that is of greater value than the gospel, that is of greater value than lost people knowing Jesus, then you have an idol, you have a sin, you have a problem, and it needs to be pushed through the gospel of Jesus. And so Timothy makes that sort of sacrifice. He pardons away with self for Christ. We don't know if he's got like a wife or kids at this point, but whoever it is that's with him, like, he's giving up being where he's at to travel hundreds of miles through rough terrain to make sure that churches are strengthened and then go preach the gospel. Verse 4 and 5, as they went on their way through the cities, they delivered to them for observance the decisions that had been reached by the apostles and elders who were in Jerusalem. So the churches were strengthened in faith, and they increased in numbers daily. So the decision that was made by the Jerusalem council in chapter 15 early on, now Paul, Timothy, Silas are going and encouraging these churches, these Gentile churches. Hey, look, you don't have to be circumcised in order to be saved. And they were encouraged by that. That was a straight focus. That was a goal, a simple goal, and they were achieving it. And the church was again, what? Strengthened. Paul did not leave Barnabas and Mark with a chip on his shoulder. He did not go do his own thing because all the other churches got it wrong and he's got it right. He had the gospel of Jesus as the primary focus and goal for what it is he was to do. And I'll say this, when the church is fed the honest truth, it is strengthened. This is why we open the word. This is why we sing the word. That's why we read the word out loud together. This is why when we come in to community groups, we need to have the word and we need to be in prayer because it is what strengthens us. We are weak, frail people, day in and day out, right? I need thee, Lord, I need thee. Like every millisecond, I need thee because we are that weak. It is the word of God that strengthens us. And it may not always result in this sharp numerical increase like we see on a daily basis here, but it will strengthen the church's core and faith for sure. It will strengthen us for sure. I want to see this neighborhood. I want to see the four corners of this city, and I want to see the globe impacted in a mighty way by a little church located in the heart of a tough neighborhood called Redeemer. I believe God can do mighty things from the people in this room. If we never grow in number again because we keep sending everybody out, I believe we will continue to have a big impact around the globe. And so what do you need to be pardoned of today? What do you need to let go of? What do you need to settle as a disagreement instead of a point of division? Right? Maybe you got a little bit of beef with somebody here, you guys got a heated conversation. There's a difference. Is it a point of disagreement or is it a point of division? Because there is a difference. Where do you need to go? Who do you need to be in partnership with at this time in your life? Who do you need to walk alongside you, or who do you need to ask to come alongside you? Which community group best fits the mission that God has put you on? Let's be even more practical. We have 7 different community groups right now. We could probably have 9 or 10 with the amount of people we have, but all of them are different. All of them are located in different parts of the city. All of them have different influences and different stories. Not everyone is the same as far as the people and the dynamic of the group. But maybe you need to find out where is it that God would put you as far as a community group. What of yourself do you need to deny in order to be obedient? What is it that you have to just let go of? Maybe some form of pride, egos coming in the way. Oh, I'm not letting go of this. Maybe that's the very thing you need to let go of. Right? If somebody said something bad, like maybe it's political or sports related or whatever it is, if somebody says something, you jump on it right away, maybe that's an idol. It could be. Just call it the idol test. But if somebody says something about Jesus, you're kind of like, well, whatever. What if we were really eager about Christ in that way? We're ready to jump on that conversation about Christ. And anything else, man, we can easily put that to the wayside. What do you need to let go of? And here's the dream I have for us all, that we'd have such an impact with the gospel that it would not only reach the lost, but it would strengthen our church, and it would strengthen other churches in this city and around the globe. I want to see your community groups swell because of your desire to reach people and bring them into your homes. That's what I long for. I want to see displaced believers in this city become encouraged by your desire to show them Jesus. I want other churches to see that we are not a threat, but we are an encouragement, and we want to lock arms for the sake of the kingdom. And I want us to plant churches in areas that people just really don't want to go. And I want us to be known for giving of ourselves in ways that it leaves others to say that, wow, that could only be an act of God. There's no other reason that somebody would lay that down except that it be for God. And so, church, might we become a church so centered on Jesus that even when we disagree, it would not divide us, but make us stronger.